the world to turn around. All our hopes have come to be, and the people gather around. And they offer all what they can bring. The revolution starts now. Yeah, the revolution starts now in your own backyard, in your own hometown. So what you do is stand in the rain, just follow your heart. The revolution starts now. Yeah, the revolution starts now in your own backyard. What you do is stand around, just bow your heart. Your revolution starts now.
Yeah, that revolution's going to start right now with this interview tonight. Tonight we're going to take a look at the recent atmospheric river rainstorms that have inundated the North State over the past month. The deluges have caused flooding, pummeled coastal areas with an estimated $31 billion in damages statewide. Governor Newsom declared a state of emergency. All of this in the midst of a historic drought. So how did we go from a drought emergency with water shortages and cutbacks to a flood emergency? Is there really a water shortage? Or is this shortage a man-made crisis of mismanagement of public resources of water and land? With me tonight is Patrick Porgans of Porgans Associates, a government regulatory compliance analyst and public records forensic accountant. Patrick has spent his career researching, analyzing, and reporting on the state and federal water projects here in California. Hello, Patrick. Good to have you tonight. Are you there? Patrick? All right. It seems like we're having a slight little problem with the phone system here, so I am going to play another song and see if I can figure this out.
Magic everywhere, searching for that sound of hope that I heard. And if you listen very carefully, you can hear the sound of people singing all across the land, songs that have been banned. Forbidden bells are ringing, talking very low, telling what they know about a time when all the creatures share the earth. I thought I heard you speak. I thought I heard you speak. But you're just an animal or some old tree. But I could swear you said that you are my friend. I thought I felt some love. I thought I felt...
Okay, I think we have the problem solved here, and let's go. Patrick, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you.
All right, there we go. All right. So let's see, with me tonight is Patrick Porgans, and great to have you on the show again tonight, Patrick.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, let's get started here with let's take a look at that the recent paper that you put out titled "Water Shortages, Flood Disaster, and Historic Droughts: Has California Gone Nuts?" There's a lot in this paper. I've looked it over thoroughly, what I'd like to do tonight is just kind of break it down, and by starting with, the drought and the resulting reports of water shortages, and how mostly urban users are the ones told to conserve while Big Ag continues to export water in the form of almonds and other crops. So your report shows that acreage of tree nut orchards has continued to rise even during drought years.
Yeah, that's correct. If I may, what I'd like the audience to understand is during the course of this program, we're going to explain why these conditions exist. You know, how come we have a flood, we have droughts, and then we also have these purported water shortages. And this is a repeating phenomenon. And so what we want to do is explain to the public, the listeners, that this government that runs this state, it's a reactive government. It's not proactive. It essentially, it fosters these conditions and, these natural phenomena like droughts or, these floods by being reactive as opposed to being proactive. So with that thought in mind, I'll go back to what your initial comment was, getting to the nuts and bolts of this particular program. Yes, since the year 2000, and we've had several droughts in that period, we've noted that there's about 30,000 acres of new almonds going in every year. So to put that in perspective, what it shows us is that from 2000 to the present time, we started off with, say, 400,000 or 500,000 acres of almonds, and now we're at 1.6 million acres of almonds. And in order to irrigate 1 acre of almonds, it takes between 3 and 4 acre feet of water. Now, 1 acre foot of water is where you can take 1 acre and put 1 foot of water on that acre. That's 1 foot of 326,000 gallons approximately. So what's happened is that when you take and do the math, that shows us, using a conservative figure of 3 acre feet as opposed to 4, that the almonds alone are requiring a 3.8 million acre feet of water. It's 4.8 million acre feet of water. So when you look at that, and how do we compare that? What does that mean? Well, we hear a lot about Southern California is taking Northern California's water. So we went back and we looked at the amount of water that the Metropolitan Water District in Southern California provides annually to their 19 million customers they service. And what it comes out to is they're only using 1.3 million acre feet of water. So here again, almonds are using about 4 times as much water as the urban people in Southern California. So that's some. And then, by the way, we're exporting 80% of those almonds are exported. So we're exporting our water, and in the course of doing that, we're also exporting our energy. It takes a lot of energy to produce them, energy to get the water to where it's going, and so forth.
So yeah, it's approximately 85% of all applied water in California is used for agriculture. Is that correct?
That's correct. That's according. Now, everybody should understand, when we're talking these figures, these are government figures. They're not ours. So we're depending on the government's figures to be accurate. We don't, say that they are. We're just, that's what it says, and that's what. And 7.9% is used by the urban and industrial sectors.
Wow, what happens to the other percentage there?
Well, there's some of that goes for in-stream uses and other purposes for other domestic uses and other other needs. But it's not a lot of water. The fact is 85% of the water is consumed by agriculture.
Right. So, yeah. So you mentioned, too, that 80% of all these almonds that are grown are exported. So essentially what's really happening is it's not so much almonds that are getting exported. It's our water that's getting exported.
Well, yeah, that's correct. And see, it keeps saying that California is running out of water. And as the, you know, the title of that article was saying we've got floods, we've got droughts, and then they're saying we have these water shortages. Well, an average water year, and water year begins in October 1st, ends in September 30th. So we're in the 21-22 water year. So on average, California receives about 200 million acre-feet of water. That's enough water to inundate the entire state 2 feet in water. There's 100 million acres of in California. So you can, if you put that, applied all that water, it would flood the entire state 2 feet in water.
And that's including snowpack and everything?
Yeah, that's 200 million. But let me qualify these numbers. According to the government, about 130 million acre-feet, you know, are lost to evapotranspiration or percolation to the ground. The remaining 70% is in the form of runoff. The majority of that runoff occurs here in Northern California. So we're not really out of water. If you took that 4 million acre-feet of water and you cut out half the almonds, that would free up 2 million acre-feet of water. That would be more than enough water to meet our future needs. However, again, it's a matter of, you know, where are our priorities. Now, I testified before the State Water Resource Control Board during their drought hearings, and I pointed out to them back in 1987 through the 1992 drought, and I pointed it out to them in the 2012 to 2016 drought, that, you know, these guys were planting all these almonds. And I said, you know, this is what's, you know, exacerbating the problem. We should, you know, find out why we are putting ourselves in this vulnerable position. And on an average year, if we're, all our reservoirs are full, the majority of which hold about 43 million acre-feet of water, and about 30 million acre-feet of water supplied annually in California, and 60% of the water comes from surface sources, and another 40% comes from the ground. That's in what we call, quote-unquote, a normal average water year. However, when you have a drought, it's inverse. 40% comes from the surface, and 60% comes from the ground. So if they were applying the water in a way where, when they, you know, come into a drought cycle, if they had a way of, you know, having less permanent crops, which is what I was arguing about, we shouldn't be putting them in, especially during drought years, and have crops that, you know, annual crops, where, you know, you can, you don't have to plant your lettuce or your beets every year. You can, you know, turn the water off from those crops. But when you have these almond trees, they need the water in order to stay alive. So if we use the water more responsibly, and we didn't apply the water for, as in this case, nuts and alfalfa, by the way, which is another big water consumer, and grapes. And, you know, most of the grapes are wine grapes, and we're exporting a lot of that commodity also.
Right.
So they don't have a kind of plan to deal with this these type of drought years or floods.
Yeah. So I guess that kind of begs the question, if, you know, they're using all this water for agriculture, much of it for almonds, and most of those almonds are exported, that would mean that those exports are part of the GDP for the state of California. And, you know, California...
Right. Well, if you look at, you know, the GDP for, say, California was, I think it was $2.8 trillion this last year. Out of that, only 2.8 or 2.5% is agriculture. That's all that is. It's not a big contributor to the overall GDP.
Yeah, you would
to say that we don't eat agriculture. We do, but it's not a major factor in terms of the total GDP that we have. And California is fifth largest GDP on the planet at this point in time.
Right. You would think taking that much of the water for an industry would be a bigger contributor to the state's economy, but so obviously there's something else going on here. And so anyways, all of this water, all these water transfers, all of this mismanagement of water resources, who is responsible? Who are the responsible agencies for this?
Well, that's a good point. What we have here, the major entities that have the public trust responsibility for both flood control and for, you know, providing, you know, water for the people of the state of California are, one is the Department of Water Resources, and the other is the State Water Resource Control Board. Now, they're both departments, more or less, or boards. They're not what you call cabinet members to the governor's cabinet. So you have the Natural Resource Agency, which oversees the Department of Water Resources. Then you have Cal EPA, that California Environmental Protection Agency, that oversees the State Water Resource Control Board. And what we found over the years, because I spent decades on this, and, you know, each time we have these drought years, they do two things. In order to make up for the inherent shortages of the State Water Project, or the State Water Project, which only provides about 4%, maybe 5%, depending on the water year type, of the total water needs for California, it's a very minimal amount. However, the State Water Project was historically, knowingly underfinanced and contractually overcommitted. In other words, it contracted for more water than it could provide. And back in 1963, under their Bulletin 132 series, they said that they would be depending a lot on, you know, surplus water in the Delta. Well, you know, in years now, because of the demands on the Delta and the demands on Northern California's water, there really isn't. And the demands below the Delta, there's not really much surplus water. So what they do, they do two things. Like during the 2012-2014 drought in 2016, so that'd be 2012 to 2016 drought. In the last 2 years of that drought, the governor, Brown, former governor, he issued a proclamation that mandatory conservation for the water users in the urban sector. So the urban sector was required to cut back 25% or they'd be fined, you know. And they had to cut out a lot of their lawns and, you know, their shrubs and whatever else. Well, in the interim, the State Water Resource Control Board was implementing those cutbacks along with the Department of Water Resources. The Department of Water Resources was emptying out its reservoir up here at Oroville and essentially went back to the State Water Resource Control Board, its sister agency, and told them we don't have enough water to meet the Bay Delta water quality standards. Now, both the Department of Water Resources and the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation, they operate and maintain the Central Valley Project, federal project, and the State Water Project is managed, so to speak, quote unquote, by the Department of Water Resources. So what they do is they empty out the reservoirs in the north. They claim they don't have enough carryover water to meet the standards that are imposed on their water right permits. Now, people need to understand water is a public trust resource. That means that the people of the state of California have, that's their water. The Department of Water Resources, the Bureau of Reclamation, they have permits to use the water, and they have to get those permits through the State Water Resource Control Board. So during that 2014-2016 period, there was an estimated 3.2 million acre feet of water that was quote unquote conserved or saved. So that's almost enough water to, you know, just a little short of about a million acre feet to irrigate all those almonds or provide enough water for the Metropolitan Water District for 3 years. So my question to the board was, where is that 3.2 million acre feet of water? Is that a good question?
Yeah, if we conserved it, where'd it go?
Yeah, so they said they'd have to look, and I said, you don't have to look very far. You know where when it went to the State Water Project and to the Central Valley Water Project contractors, okay? And so here we have the people in the urban sector, you know, having to make a mandatory cutback of 25%, and in the same time, they're being charged more for less water. So where's the incentive there? And in the interim, that water was taken by DWR and the Bureau and made available to their contractors. So, and back in the 1987-1992 drought, in 1990-91-92, we caught DWR illegally diverting 500,000 acre feet of the water from the Delta, which was causing impacts to my clients, agricultural clients in the Delta, because the water that was made available to them was heavily laden with salts. And when you put that salt water on, you know, on the soils, it tends to impede the soil's ability to perform and grow crops that are, you know, of some value. And even when my clients on Sherman Island, 10,000 acres, because DWR failed to provide the water, which they're required to do by decision 1485 and decision 1641, their water right decisions that were established by the state board, which are in part of the operating criteria for the permits that were issued to both the Department of Water Resources and the Bureau of Reclamation. However, they violated those standards on 218 different occasions. And we brought the matter to the legislature's attention, and we had 15 to 20 high-ranking assembly persons come over there with us and ask the board, why are they not enforcing the law? Well, it turns out we had a whole bunch of hearings, and the department, the State Water Resource Control Board, made a determination they were not going to take an action, an enforcement action, against the Department of Water Resources or the Bureau. Now, if you or I were doing that, we can be fined up to $500 a day, and they would issue what they call, administrative liability. They would issue a notice that you'd have to stop exporting that water, or diverting that water. So, a long story short, what we have here is a dual enforcement system. We have a sister agency that's, you know, making good for a project that was historically underfinanced and contractually overcommitted. And we have what you call it, a selective enforcement policy. So if you or I were to take the water, and we would be cited, but DWR gets away with it because the State Water Project's funding and financing is directly attached to the State Water, the State of California's credit rating. That's another story, but anyway, it's all part of this whole conundrum.
Yeah. So let's jump to kind of something that we talked about earlier today, but let's talk about the flooding and statements made by Gavin Newsom recently. You know, as 90% of Californians have been under a flood emergency warning, Governor Newsom was out threatening, making public statements threatening mandatory water cuts if Californians don't use less water. Yet 90% of the state is under a flood emergency. And he also announced recently, I think you said today, that he's cutting funding for flood control projects.
Yes, this week, earlier this week, he said he was going to cut back the amount of money he's spending for flood control. Now, that's an interesting point because, again, you know, he's claiming we got $31 billion worth of flood damages down, for the most part, in Southern California, you know, in the coastal communities. Well, he knew that was coming because back in 2011 and just this past year, 2022, the U.S. Geological Survey, which is a federal agency, had, and they're an independent agency, they're not a regulatory body, they just do scientific work, they're non-biased. And they said that the areas there in the coastal areas, they're going to be subjected to some significant damages in the event we had a series of these arc storms. Now, the arc storm is, you know, a new expression or definition of what they used to call Hawaiian Expresses, okay? That would be an atmosphere, and they call them atmospheric rivers. That would be like a system that would be stretching from Hawaii all the way to California, and it would have a band so wide. And when it comes into the state, it usually would bring a lot of warm rain, you know, at higher elevations, and it would be torrential rains. And so in both those reports that were done, it stated that, you know, California is not ready for these types of storms or mega floods. So here we have, $31 billion they purported damages from this last series of storms that took place in the early part of January until mid-January. And then there's another part of that report says that in the Central Valley, for example, this type of system was to occur, you know, where, say, we had a year, the prior year was a wet year, and the soils were saturated and the reservoirs were up. This type of storm systems that we're witnessing now, and some which would even be more extreme, the USGS is saying that $725 billion worth of the assets downstream, say from Orville Dam, you know, are in harm's way. And that means that, you know, when this water is coming down through the watershed, in particular the Feather River watershed, because most of the storm damages that we've witnessed, say, since the 1950s, have been in the Feather River watershed. And that's generally because the watershed up there is, in a given year, they can get as much as 9 million acre feet of water in that watershed. So the Orville Dam is only capable of holding about 3.5 million acre feet. And only of that, only 750,000 acre feet are for flood control reservation during the winter.
Wow.
So what's happened is that historically, before the levees were completed, the project levees on the Feather River, which were completed in 1954, most of the water coming down the river never made it to its confluence there at Verona, where it empties into the Sacramento River.
Yeah, I've seen it. I've seen it pretty. I've seen it pretty dry down there.
Sorry?
I've seen it pretty dry down there. They actually closed the marina this past summer because the Verona Marina, because there wasn't enough water at the confluence.
Yeah, no, that's true. And so what's happened, getting back to why this is a real problem at Oroville, it's because the waters never really made it all the way down the river, right? That water would overflow the west bank of the river, and it would go all the way across the Sutter Butte Sink. And in some years, like in 1904, 1907, and even in the 1930s, some of that water was so high that it would go all the way across the 25-mile width of the valley and overtop the levees on the west side of the Sacramento River and cause damage, right? So now all of that's been closed off. Now, getting back to these cuts that the governor is proposing, those cuts are, you know, part of that Central Valley Flood Control Plan. As far back as 1985, I was pushing for a comprehensive flood plan for the entire state of California, which does not exist right now. And so they came up with the Central Valley Flood Plan. And in it, I had three particular proposals that would help to alleviate the floodwaters coming out of Oroville. And people need to understand that the problem with Oroville is that, you know, under the flood control manual that was established by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, it's permissible for DWR to discharge 150,000 CFS over that spillway. If you and your audience remember, it was 5 years ago that we had that partial collapse of the spillway where the floodwaters would come over the, you know, through the spillway gates down into the river. And so it collapsed. And it collapsed when only 50,000 CFS were coming down. And they weren't hit with the arc storm at that time, because prior to that collapse, on the 5th and 6th of February of 2017, it was only 2 to 4 inches of water up there in that watershed. So that wasn't the reason why it collapsed, although that's why the director of the Department of Water Resources was alleging that that was the cause, based on a study that they funded for the Scripps Institute. And we called her on that, and she couldn't respond because we used her own data showing that what she had to say was erroneous. It was a misstatement of fact. So getting back to the problem, up there at Oroville, you know, there's a standard project flood, and then there's a probable maximum rainstorm. And I don't want to overwhelm people with too much numbers. However, we never had a standard project flood yet. And that's when you have coming into the reservoir 440,000 CFS with a 72-hour volume of about 1.5 million acre feet. That, and at that point, you can be pushing out 150,000 CFS out of the spillway. But if you have the probable maximum rainstorm, what we're talking about there is 720,000 $720,000 to $740,000 CFS coming into the reservoir with a three-day 72-hour volume of about 2.5 million acre-feet. That's a whole hell of a lot of water. And when the reservoir gets above 900 feet, like it did back in 2017, then you have all that water coming over the emergency spillway, which you have no way of controlling. So in the Corps manual, it says as much as 624,000 CFS can be coming out of that reservoir. Now, the problem, the Achilles heel here, is that the downstream channel levees, they're not designed to handle that flow of water. So what's going to happen when you push out 250 or 300,000 CFS, it's going to overtop those levees, and it's going to create some serious problems. According to the USGS report, as much as 20 or 30 levee breaks downstream, and they say that, you know, if it gets to flows at that level, I mean, we're talking about, as I mentioned earlier, $725 billion worth of assets. The 1.5 million Californians are going to have to be, you know, evacuated within 24 hours, and 225,000 are never going to be able to relocate, you know, in, where they lived before. So the entire valley could be inundated between 10 and 20 feet, something similar to the 1861-62 flood, where, you know, the whole downtown Sacramento, the old town, was flooded out. They even had the governor's inaugural down in San Francisco because that's how much of flood water we had. So we're waiting. We're talking about a catastrophe that it's not a matter that's going to happen. It's a matter of just when it's going to happen. And as these, you know, climatologists and USGS scientists assert, California's not ready. So when he's cutting money out of the Central Valley Flood Plan, you have to question, why would he be doing that? Right. In light of the fact we just had $31 billion worth of damages, and we are standing in the wake of $725 billion more.
I want to revisit. I have one question about that whole thing, but I have to take a quick station identification break. And you are listening to 90.1 FM Community Radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. And this is The Real Issue. The Real Issue is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Knockout Collision Repair, Chico's high-tech auto body shop specializing in complete collision repair and restoration. Knockout Collision works on all makes and models and always provides complimentary consultations. For an appointment or information at 899-9202 and at knockoutcollisionrepair.com, Chico's fast and fair collision repair. And you are listening to The Real Issue on 90.1 FM, KZFR Community Radio, and I'm speaking with Patrick Porgans. Patrick is from Porgans Associates, and he is a government regulatory compliance analyst and public records forensic accountant. And we've been talking about, you know, California water, this drought that we've been in, this historic drought we've been in for the last 3-5 years or whatever it's been, and then these current storms and. You know, what's really going on with California water, and do we really have water shortages during these drought years? And we've been talking about how agriculture uses 85% of California's water, and since 2000, there has been a dramatic increase in the amount of permanent crops in the way of nut trees, mostly almond trees, planted that need more and more water in these drought years. They claim there's water scarcity, but they're exporting all that water in the form of nuts. But we were talking about the Feather River and all of our flood controls and how the governor has been he's threatening mandatory water cuts in California if Californians don't start using less water. All this during 90% of Californians were in a flood emergency warning, and recently, as recent as last week, he's talking about cutting the Central Valley Flood Project budget. And Patrick, you were talking about the problems associated with the Oroville Dam and the Feather River watershed. And you were talking about how in 2017, when the spillway collapsed under an amount of water that isn't even, you know, the maximum that, that spillway is supposed to be able to handle. And then, you know, the emergency spillway breached and caused an evacuation. And that there wasn't even a tremendous amount of water, like a maximum amount of water coming through the watershed into the reservoir. So why was there so much water in the reservoir to cause all of that, to make them have to put that amount out of the spillway and then, you know, to have it top off and actually breach the embankment on the side of the spillway?
Well, the problem, if someone took a real good look at the data, there were two independent forensic teams that did a comprehensive analysis of the conditions leading up to, during, and subsequent to the spillway collapse. Now, what we found, which is a very important part, again, as I stated earlier, there was a only about 3 to 4 inches of rainfall on February 4th, 5th, 6th, and the 7th is when the spillway, you know, partially collapsed. And we were only pushing out 50,000 or 54,000 CFS. That's one-third of the 150,000, so that wasn't a lot of water. The maximum amount of water that was came down the spillway occurred back in 1997 when they pushed out 301,000 CFS coming in. And they were releasing flood releases were 167,000 CFS, and that's according to DWR's own information, which they tried to deny early on. When my engineers and myself, we went out there and we did flow measurements and showed that they were saying it was only about 152 or 3. They were wrong. They knew they were wrong. But at any rate, the problem up there at Oroville is that DWR monitors itself, so this, it violates federal flood control regulations. They're the ones that have to report themselves, but it doesn't go any further than that. There's no accountability, so something has to change there. Now, getting back to, you know, the accountability issue, now, during that 1986 flood and the 1997 flood, DWR was held responsible for both of those floods. And because either A, they misoperated the reservoir, or B, they didn't ensure that the downstream channel was being properly maintained to handle those flows, right? So the upshot on it was, even though they were sued and they had to pay, DWR didn't pay anything for that damages, nor did the State Water Project contract. You see, the in essence, the Feather River is a channel. It's sort of like the California Aqueduct North. That's how they convey their water from Oroville all the way down to the Delta, and then from the Delta, you know, from the pumps down into the California Aqueduct. So basically, they didn't have to pay. Those funds were paid back by you and me for the damages that they created. And so the victims who, you know, only received about half of what, you know, the damages they incurred, and DWR was not held accountable. The same thing with the Oroville Spillway. Now, their own team of forensic consultants, which were, you know, requested at the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission's directive, said that it was pure poor management, it was poorly designed, it wasn't properly maintained, and so forth and so on. And it was DWR's fault. So nothing happened to them. Now, there's a $1.1 billion, you know, tag there. And so about $650 million of that has been provided by FEMA, Federal Emergency Management Agency. So the rest of the money is still outstanding, and we're trying to find out where that money is going to come from. So in essence, DWR gets away with doing all these things. Now, fortunately, back in June of this past year, the legislature's joint legislative audit committee found that the data that DWR was putting out in terms of, you know, the amount of, say, for example, the amount of moisture that would have been in the snowpack was 25% of the water that's, you know, comes that we need annually generally comes from the snowpack. They underestimated the water content of the snowpack, and then there were some other issues that they got wrong. And so this Assemblyman Adam Gray pushed to have an audit. So they're under an audit at the present time, and that report is due out shortly. And I'd like to read, if I may, the quotation that was from the senator, you know, at the committee hearing where the state auditor, Michael Tillman, was present. And I quote, "California's water management strategies are outdated, heavily flawed, increasingly dangerous to the health of humans and the environment alike. As extreme drought conditions persist for longer periods and then are followed by severe and unpredictable downpours, the effects of climate change on California's water supply has just only begun," end quote. Now, that's pretty heavy, and yeah, that's a fact.
Right, so and according...
We're waiting to see... Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I was going to say, according to your report, the director of DWR, Carla Nemeth...
Yes.
Yeah, she was opposed to this investigation.
Yes, and you can understand why. As was the State Water and Source Control Board, they don't want anybody to know what they've been doing. So what they do, for example, when we stopped them from illegally stealing water from the Delta, they came up with this other scam, and what they do now is they empty out the reservoirs in the north, both the Bureau and DWR, and they don't hold enough carryover storage to meet the Bay Delta water quality standards, which they're required to do in terms and conditions of their permits, and, you know, by federal and state law. So what they say, we don't have enough water, they come back and they ask the State Water Source Control Board to grant them what they call a temporary use urgency use permit, okay? Temporary urgency change permit petition. And what that does is it lowers the standards. So that means that DWR and the Bureau have to push out less water to meet the standards because the standard is dropped. It becomes less. So that impairs not only the farmers that are in the Delta because they're going to get much more saltier water, but it also affects the all of the aquatic and terrestrial species that depend on that flow of water. So and be mindful that on average they between the DWR and the Bureau, they export between 4 to 6 million acre feet of water out of the Sacramento River River Basin on average produces about 21 million acre feet of water. And that's another issue for another program where, you know, they're coming after what we call the counties of origin, which is where water originates, and there's about 8 or 10 projects right now that want to draw more water out of the Sacramento River Basin, and it's going to become another Owens Valley. That's why those laws were enacted way back in the 30s to try to protect, in the 50s, to try to protect the water's uses in the North Valley, in particular the Sacramento River Basin. So they come back to the state board and they get this relaxation, which benefits them, but it doesn't benefit anyone else. And when they did that on several occasions, like in back in 2016, we told them in advance that if you allow that relaxation, you're going to wind up, you know, causing a significant mortality rate on the Chinook winter run salmon. And lo and behold, 95% of the fish were killed. And no one was held accountable for that.
Yeah.
Now, in addition to that, we have data that we obtained under the Public Records Act and also the Freedom of Information Act that show they kill millions of fish annually down there at those pumps. And to date, they have not been held accountable for killing one fish, one endangered species. Now, if you or I did that, we'd be held accountable for a federal offense. It's a felony.
Yeah. Yeah, the winter run Chinook are essentially considered extinct right now by NOAA and California Fish and Wildlife, from what I understand. And you know, this past summer I was part of a co-management project that began as an emergency with NOAA and California Fish and Wildlife and the Winnemem-Wintu tribe of Mount Shasta on the McLeod River to reintroduce winter run Chinook salmon above the dam because they figure in order for winter run salmon to survive, they need to be back up in those cold waters above the dam because the water below the dam is too warm and the delta is unhealthy. And there isn't even, you know, what has it been, 3 years in a row now they haven't found any delta smelt during their count, during their troll?
Yeah, that's correct. As the last, I think it was just the last month, they found none. The only ones they have now are in the aquarium, you know. And that's all because of the way they operate these projects. And if they're not going to be held accountable, what's their disincentive? So every, you know, all these water wars we've had since the 1960s, the direct result of the State Water Project being, underfinanced and contractually overcommitted. Now, we spent $6.5 billion, under a whole assortment of plans, purportedly to restore the Delta. Now, the Delta, and according to the former chairwoman of the State Water Source Control Board, named Felicia Marcus, she said on her departing of the position, when she was appointed, when the governor appointed another person to take her place, she said that the Delta is on the verge of an ecological collapse. Well, I got news for it. It's already collapsed. And we've been talking about that for years. So we've spent, and when you say $6.5 billion, a lot of this money is coming from general obligation bonds. And when you issue these bonds, which you and I have to pay for out of your paycheck, they tax you for all this, and with the food you buy, whatever, all the other taxes they put on you. That money is being used to pay for these ongoing plans that continue to fail. So what we found the last, back in 2018, they were doing the twin tunnels for the Delta. You might remember that.
Mm-hmm.
Where
yeah,
they were
well,
going to take
a whole,
and suck the water right out of where the Sacramento River empties into
that's
the Delta.
A whole
nother,
that's a whole other thing. Like, you know, the Delta's already in collapse, and they haven't even built the tunnels yet.
Well, that was another thing. They just came out with this, report, their draft environmental impact report, and they were asking, how would, and they're proposing how they're going to mitigate for the damages from the twin tunnel. Well, it's not a twin tunnel, it's a single tunnel. And one of the reasons why it got knocked down to a single tunnel is because when we were engaged in those proceedings, because we were, formally involved as expert witnesses, we explained to them that, first of all, they were saying they wanted to improve and upgrade the Delta water conveyance system. That was what they said. And my point was, where is the existing Delta water conveyance system? Is that a good point? Is they going to upgrade it?
Yeah, absolutely.
So essentially, they looked at the maps. They couldn't find it. I said, forget it, because it wasn't built. That was master levies. It was about $80-some-odd million that was, appropriated for that back in 1960 as part of the State Water Project authorization. And they use that money for other purposes, like building the aqueduct so they can make sure they get the water from the Delta down south. So in the interim, we found that they were meeting behind closed doors. The State Water Source Control Board and DWR personnel were meeting behind closed doors, which was in violation of the ex parte communication rules and regulations, right? So right after that, there was a whole bunch of lawsuits that were filed to get them to provide all the information associated with what they were doing. Because at the end of each meeting, DWR would collect all of the information that was discussed beyond the hearing process, and they would hide it. And so ultimately what happened was they came out subsequent to that a few months later and said they're not doing the twin tunnels, they're going to do a single tunnel. So when they solicited comments to the report for the proposed single tunnel, I said, well, wait a minute. Why am I going to be responding, or anyone in the public responding, to what you're going to do to mitigate the impacts associated with a project you haven't developed when you brought the whole system to an ecological collapse? When you haven't mitigated for that? Now we're investigating the use of monies. They may be using bond money, general obligation bond monies, for mitigation purposes. Now that's illegal, okay? And another issue that's going on, which the public should be apprised of, because remember, this is the public's water. And so the other part of this equation is with all this bond money, the Water Commission, DWR, and the State Board are allocating funds for, you know, projects such as the Sites Reservoir, which, you know, that's just a revised rendition of several different names on it, but it used to be the Glen Complex, and that failed because, first of all, where's all the surplus water they're talking about? You know, there's 120 to 140 inch evaporation rate over there. They'd have to pump the water up. There's so many unknowns, it's pathetic. And then there's the Tuscan groundwater, then there's the Pechero Lake, Pechero Reservoir down below the Delta, and it goes on and on. So essentially, I'm saying to them, you need to provide information about the impacts you've already, you know, created as opposed to what you're going to create, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
They're not being held accountable. So we're waiting to see, you know, what this audit is going to do. And I sent them a 58-page, you know, report on, you know, what they needed to look for and why this system is not going to change unless the EWR and the State Board are held accountable for, you know, their shenanigans, their behind-the-scenes, closed-door, you know, whatever they got going on. And then we got to find out who's pushing these bonds, right? You know, we're talking $20 to $30 billion worth of bonds. And every dollar you borrow, that's another dollar in interest. So we found that, you know, several of the major landowners, billionaires, down in the Central and Southern California, they're essentially pushing these bonds because they're going to get the money for helping to develop projects that they're going to be developing, and they're going to sell us back our own water, which we're going to be paying for to build it, and then we're going to pay them to provide us with the water.
Yeah, we've got a couple more minutes left, Patrick, and is there anything else that you wanted to mention here? I think we've covered everything that I wanted to cover. We've covered pretty much this whole report that you had sent me that I went through. I do have one more. So you were talking earlier about all that acre feet that was conserved by urban use by
urban use and by reductions in the Bay Delta standards.
And where, you know, and they couldn't account for where that water went. How can the public, because, you know, that's our water. That's water that we, you know, would normally have been used by urban users. And then we conserved it and, you know, they ended up shipping it off, but how can we demand that water not be shipped off and actually helps the Delta?
Well, one of the key things we have to do is the public has to stop, you know, approving these bond acts, you know, Clean Water Act, Safe Drinking Water, all that nonsense. Most of that's being, you know, promoted by, you know, these big four landowners. For example, Donald Brand. He owns about 90,000 acres of Orange County. There's only 300,000 acres down there. He's farming 40,000 acres. He's got nut trees there. He's got other, you know, he does range cattle, so forth and so on. Then you've got the Resnicks. He's got 26.5 square miles of just almonds alone, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then you got the Tejon Ranch. You know, they got another several hundred thousand acres. And others, and when you combine them all together, they got about 720,000 acres of land that are already approved for master plans, right? And the master plans, they're building them out now, you know, for, you know, high-end type of developments for, or, you know, people who have hundreds of millions or tens of millions of dollars where they can live there. So the problem is the only way they can do that is they have to have a firm supply of water. That's one of the reasons why they started planting all those almonds, because essentially they can say that, you know, we needed the water for almonds, and they're going to be holding on to that water. Even they only have a contract. They don't even have a right to that water. They have a contract, just like the department has a permit. They don't own it.
Okay, hey,
so
hey Patrick, we
people
are...
stop.
Patrick, we're out of time for tonight's show, and I want to thank you for being on, and I also want to mention to our listeners tonight that... Patrick provided me with many links to all of the information that he was talking about tonight, and I'm going to post all these links on the North State Water Report Facebook page, so that people can, if you're curious and want to follow up on all this information that and read about it yourself that Patrick talked about tonight. I will post all that. And Patrick, do you have a website or anything that people can access?
Well, there's a website. It's www.planetarysolutionaries.org. If you just have people Google or whatever, Edge Patrick Porgan's water, right? Okay. They'll get a lot of information. They can go to different sources. And if they want to email us request information, it's pp@porgansolutions.com. And then if they send me an email, we'll give them links to those articles and other articles, okay?
Okay. Thank you very much, Patrick. And yeah, I want to have you on again in the future once you, I know you're working on another report. I'll be very curious to learn more about.
Yeah, we want to protect the waters of the North State, and that's under the counties of an area origin, which are under attack. We need to wake the people up there because it's going to become another Owens Valley. Thank you for your time and for having us on.
Critical. Thank you, Patrick.
You're welcome.
Good evening.